Hello again and welcome to another edition of Dakota Digest. I'm Nate Weck and thanks for joining me once again. Here's the top radio news of South Dakota Public Broadcasting for the week ending August 5th. Some education officials are calling for cleanup legislation following last year's teacher pay raises. Educators from across the state gathered Thursday in Sioux Falls at the Associated School Boards and School Administrators Convention. SDPB's Aaron Myros reports.
Joy Smolniski is with the South Dakota Budget and Policy Institute. She says now that the half-cent sales tax to raise teacher salaries is signed into law, the legislation needs to be adjusted to clarify how the pay increase is implemented.
There were two bills passed. One said half-cent goes to raising teacher salaries, a percentage of that half-cent. The other one said teacher salaries go up, inflation or 3%, whichever is less. So this is one of those cleanup situations where you need to go back after the bills have passed and said, how is this actually going to work when we do the calculations?
Some educators have questions about the new law. Amy Poliski is a board member of the Rapid City Area School District. She wants to ensure teacher salaries remain competitive moving forward.
We need to clarify how the half-cent sales tax will be used each year in the future. From what I understand now, it does not go into the schools each year, but every 3 years when they reevaluate the teacher's salary in comparison to the surrounding states. I think the taxpayer is confused by that because the intent of the tax increase was to fund education. And from what I've heard today, I think that money is at risk of going into the general fund and not being available in 3 years when we will need to increase teacher salaries again.
Officials say any piece of legislation as comprehensive as the education package is expected to need adjustments as it takes effect.
Last fall, a student shot and wounded the principal at Harrisburg High School. Last week, school officials looked back to evaluate the safety plan used during that event. SDPB's Aaron Myros has more.
After a student shot Principal Kevin Lean in his office, Assistant Principal Ryan Rollinger tackled the student while waiting for law enforcement. Rollinger says school administrators are the people who teach school drills, but it's important for administrators to consider what actions they would take in case of an active shooter.
Since I've been through this situation, I've had a lot of professionals come in and talk to me about the fact that maybe thinking about that ahead of time is what caused us not to have to think so much and just react to the situation.
High school principal Kevin Lean says school leaders followed protocol that helped all the students to remain safe. But he says part of preventing an event like this is paying attention to students in need.
You know, again, like I mentioned before, it's really asking the insightful questions, really actually genuinely caring about the people next to you and then taking that time. And I know we're all busy. And I know we have lots of things to do and priority lists on our desks, but there's nothing more important than that interaction and that human interaction that can assist. And so I've got an unbelievably great counseling staff and, you know, continually lauding them and wondering just how they take all of that in, you know, asking them how do you get rid of things yourself, because they had to take a lot of things in this year, all the way up to the end of our school year. But that kind of communication, and we keep that open. You know, it's, you want to let time fade away some of the fears and fright and anxieties, but at the same time, you want to keep some consciousness level of, boy, we need to deal with this if somebody's got a problem. So that's our plan.
Changes to the school include how people enter the building and more panic buttons to alert people outside the school if there's an emergency.
Officials say tribes in the Dakotas have the potential to expand local food growing operations. Nutritionists working in Indian Country say traditional values align with the goals of food sovereignty and sustainability. As SDPB's Kenzie Wagner reports, the second annual Tribal Food Conference is scheduled for Bismarck next week.
Wanda Agnew is a dietitian and instructor at United Tribes Technical College. She's speaking at the Tribal Foods Conference. Her presentation is called Connecting Mother Earth to Health at the Kitchen Table. It includes a food calendar.
Using indigenous words as well as some English words to support it, show that there were not seasons like summer, winter, spring, and fall, and the months, of course, the English language. But based on the moons, everyone lived using local foods, and food really supported supported strength in a community. It supported the health of the community. It supported the villages being able to care for each other and all ages working together.
Agnew adds that she's not against scientifically engineered foods to support large populations, but she thinks it's still possible to have all natural food diets.
It's just so important that we go back to real food and that we teach the cultures and the traditions and the values and the memories that come with food. So there's much that can be pulled together with having people grow their own food.
The Tribal Foods Conference includes Agnew's presentation and other experts covering topics including growing and gathering food on tribal lands.
A new report shows that South Dakota lags behind in support for working parents. The state is one of 12 that received an F rating for not expanding upon federal laws for maternity and paternity leave. SDPB's Ali Kanofchinsky has more.
Sarah Fleischfink is with the National Partnership for Women and Families. The organization examined practices that support working parents in all 50 states. Fleischfink says the Federal Family and Medical Leave Act took effect 23 years ago. But she says South Dakota is one state that has not adopted support for employed new and expecting parents beyond these standards. She says the survey ranks states on paid family medical leave, pregnancy laws, paid sick days, and protections for nursing mothers. She says South Dakota can up its grade by passing legislation that improves conditions for families.
Legislators should care about passing policies to help working families for so many reasons, some of them specific to each of these different types of laws, and some of them just about a general principle of helping working families to with the supports that they need. And that while helping working families, you also are helping the economy and businesses and communities to thrive.
But officials like Sean Lyons with the South Dakota Retailers Association says the outside survey doesn't consider the regulations of individual businesses.
This out-of-state group is trying to impose a one-size-fits-all study when, in fact, you've got the private marketplace doing it on their own. It seems having the mandate versus common sense approach that a lot of businesses are trying to do on their own without a mandate is how we should be doing business.
Lyons says many companies have improved accommodations and policies for employees and customers. But Sarah Fleischfink says the country needs further progress. She hopes for more federal action to provide equal protection nationwide.
A union-backed ballot measure in South Dakota seeks to give organizations the right to charge fees for services provided. As SDPB's Lee Strubinger reports, unions call it a matter of fairness, but opponents call the measure forced fees.
South Dakota is a right-to-work state, meaning unions are voluntary. If passed, initiated Measure 23 gives corporate organizations and nonprofit organizations the right to charge a fee for any service provided. The measure gives unions the chance to collect on services they say benefit workers who don't pay dues. Jason George is with the International Union of Operating Engineers Local 49. He says there's a fundamental loophole in state law that allows non-union workers to reap the benefits of union contract negotiations.
There's other people that they work right next to that do pay. So we in the South Dakota law, under the right to work law, there's a fundamental, what we're calling a slacker loophole, that allows people in the workplace, some people are paying for the services of negotiating the contract, et cetera, and some people aren't. But everybody in the workplace, whether you're paying or not, gets the benefits of that contract.
George says they are focusing on the fairness issue, regardless of whether or not people support unions. He estimates if IM-23 is passed, the fee for non-union workers would be somewhere under $35 a month, which is an average union fee. But opponents include David Owen, the president of the South Dakota Chamber of Commerce. He says IM-23 is poorly written. He adds that it allows unions to force collection of fees from non-union workers.
IM-23 is going to put fees in place so hardworking teachers, firefighters, city workers, state workers can be assessed a fee by the unions. And unions they have chosen not to belong to. And we're opposed to these kinds of fees.
Owen says one of the chamber's concerns is whether or not a person has to agree with a contract the union negotiates. If passed, the measure takes effect on July 1st next year.
A seasonal ranger at Wind Cave National Park is celebrating his 50th anniversary working for the National Park Service. What makes this personal milestone even more significant is that this year is the National Park Service's centennial. SDPB's Jim Kent stopped by Wind Cave to talk to the senior ranger.
We tell the stories, American people. We tell the stories of the tribal people. We tell the stories of all the people.
And there's something about wilderness that modern man needs.
The National Park Service was created by an act of Congress on August 25, 1916, and charged with preserving the ecological and historical integrity of the places entrusted to its management, while also making them available and accessible for public use and enjoyment. 50 years later, Don Frankfort became a National Park Service ranger.
I'm originally from New York City. First came here in summer of 1967 with a seasonal job here at Wind Cave. I chose to work here. Actually, I chose to work here because I got a job offer. This was really not my first choice when I was applying for seasonal jobs in the Park Service. This was way down the list, but I got a job offer and figured, okay, I'll try it for a three-month summer, and I can always go somewhere else next time.
But next time never really came.
It was a wonderful place, and I enjoyed what I was doing, enjoyed the people I worked with and everything.
Other than a slight diversion for 1 year working at the Statue of Liberty, Wind Cave has been Frankfort's lifelong National Park Service assignment.
I think it's pretty cool that I've worked for half the existence of this agency.
As for the national park that was Frankfort's first choice 50 years ago, Crater Lake, Oregon.
We're descending about a 20-story building now into the cave.
But in hindsight, and with an intense fear of heights, Don Frankfort says there's really been no better place for him to have spent his career than in a nice, safe cave, where he'll be back again next year.
On Wednesday, South Dakota Attorney General Marty Jackley announced charges against two men for drug offenses. As SDPB's Aaron Myros reports, the men were hired as consultants from a Colorado company that worked to help set up a marijuana resort with the Flandreau Santee Sioux tribe.
Jackley says Eric Hagan is charged with conspiracy to possess more than 10 pounds of marijuana. Co-conspirator Jonathan Hunt is also charged for alleged drug offenses. In June of 2015, an agreement was made between the Flandreau tribe and the consulting company Monarch to create a marijuana operation on the reservation. Jackley says at time there were about 600 marijuana plants at the facility. Eventually, the tribe destroyed the crop for fear of a federal raid. Jackley says plans for the operation extended beyond tribal lands, impacting non-tribal members.
When you look at this plan, though, this went beyond enrolled members of a federally recognized tribe. This went beyond the borders of the tribe. When you put together a plan, an open plan, about consumption, about producing upwards of 300 pounds of marijuana a month, and that consumption would involve consumption lounges that has impaired driving, that creates public safety and health issues, along with literally busing our college kids to smoke marijuana.
Paul Lewis is the state's attorney in Moody County. He says he hopes the charges get tribal officials to reevaluate their stand on marijuana.
This morning is a clarion call from the people of the state of South Dakota to the executive council of the Flandreau Santee Sioux tribe to reconsider their efforts towards moving forward with an adult playground for marijuana ingestion and consumption. The state of South Dakota surrounds this reservation. This reservation really consists no more than 2,200 acres. As a matter of fact, this reservation's trust land is surrounded on all sides by state land. And the people of the state of South Dakota have determined that it is unlawful to possess, unlawful to ingest, unlawful to grow, and unlawful to distribute marijuana.
Future court dates are scheduled for August 15th.
A transgender attorney is touring South Dakota to build understanding and acceptance. Ellen Krug spoke at the Equality Center in Sioux Falls on Monday evening and at the Rapid City Public Library on Tuesday night on how to interact with diverse populations. SDPB's Lee Strubinger reports.
Ellen Krug says she is the first Iowa attorney to transition genders. Krug also says she's one of the few attorneys in the country to try jury cases in separate genders. Now Krug lives in Minneapolis, where she leads a nonprofit. She's making her way through South Dakota and Wyoming. She says these are both states where LGBTQ people can be refused service.
In theory, at a hotel that I check into, if the owner of the hotel says, "We don't want your type here," they can refuse me service. And in theory, I have no legal recourse against them. That's at the back of my mind. And I'm only here as a visitor. I can imagine, though, what it's like if you live here. And you know that your rights are lesser than the rights of other people.
Krug says she's traveling across South Dakota and Wyoming, offering a tool set for interacting with diverse humans, with an emphasis on transgender people. She says she believes that many people want to do the right thing, but she says they don't always know how to interact with those who have changed their gender. She says that's where conversation comes in.
I'm just asking people to have an open mind. You know, I'm a nice person. I think that most people, if you sat down and had a cup of coffee with me for a half hour, I think that you would like me. And I think that you'd have a better understanding of what it means to be different in our society. And maybe you would come away and saying, you know what? She's okay. Let's let her check into the hotel.
Krug says she wants her conversations to be a ripple of hope that lead to more compassion towards the transgender community.
The Sturgis Motorcycle Rally is just a week away, and roads and businesses won't be the only places packed with bikers. Rapid City Regional Hospital officials expect the emergency rooms to be just as overcrowded. So they're advising locals to save a trip to the ER for emergencies only, and choose urgent care centers whenever possible. SDPB's Kenzie Wagner has more.
Dr. Alexia Gillen is the medical director for Rapid City Regional Urgent Care Facilities. She says during the rally, urgent care can treat common health complaints like wounds, the stomach bug, and even respiratory infections.
So it would be the hope this year that we can help to keep the emergency department providers able and open to take care of emergency situations, and then our community and tourists in town who have more minor concerns can certainly come to the urgent cares.
Gillen adds that even though urgent care is also busy during the rally, it's able to see a quick turnover on patients. Some regionally owned healthcare centers are closed during the rally, like Massaberry Clinic in Sturgis. While officials don't expect this year's event to be as large as last year's 75th rally, they still encourage locals to fill prescriptions and make appointments before or after the rally.
And that's going to do it for this week's edition of Dakota Digest. If you'd like to see more radio news stories of South Dakota Public Broadcasting, just visit us online at listen.sdpb.org. Also, be sure to connect with us on social media by liking South Dakota Public Broadcasting on Facebook and by following us on Twitter. Our handles are at SODACPB, at SDPB News, at SDPB Sports, and at SDPB. For South Dakota Public Broadcasting, I am Nate Weck. Have a great weekend, everyone.